today we get to hear from the sweet Carolina wren, a small bird that we're going to feature in today's episode as our nature sound. This sweet bird is, a favorite of mine, one that I found pretty early on when I started trying to look for more bird sounds around and identifying. And I asked our guest today, Amy June, if she had a particular bird in mind, and the Carolina wren was what came up for her. So, happy to feature it, and the recording that you're gonna hear before this, was in the late August, so it's definitely gonna be, you're gonna hear more the sounds of summer, per se, which is a good reminder as we're easing into winter. The sounds that we used to hear, it's a pretty busy soundscape during summer compared to now. It's a lot more still. So, yes, here are some bird facts. This bird, Carolina wren, has such a rich cinnamon plumage with a white eyebrow stripe and a long upward cocked tail. The Carolina wren often comes to backyards if food is available and will visit your suet feeders in the winter too. During the cold northern winters, the wrens take shelter in nest boxes containing dried grasses, particularly in boxes with slots rather than holes, which I've always been curious on how they get in there. They're just so tiny, I guess. It's also important to keep a brush pile in your yard as a great way of encouraging wrens to take up residence, which is a really good reminder as many people are trying to clear their yard, make it look all nice, when really doing less work can help the local ecosystem more. A good reminder for all of us out there. Here's some of the quirky bird facts. One captive male Carolina wren sang nearly 3,000 times in a single day. And this makes me think, what's a normal amount for them to sing in a single day? How much do we talk in a single day? 3,000 seems like a lot, but as I'm speaking now, it could just zoom by so quickly. I think it's a lot. Looking for more data on that. Let me know if you find anything. The pair bonds, so the relationships that male and females have, at any time of the year, the pair will stay together for life. The members of the pair stay together on their territory year-round and forage and move around the territory together. So adorable. That's just heartwarming. The oldest Carolina wren was at least 7 years old, 7 years and 8 months old, and it was first banded in Florida in 1997 and then recaptured in 2004 in Florida. And that's how they checked the age. And I think it was released even after 2004. 7 years is a good bit for this teeny little bird. So would you imagine that? These sweet little Carolina wrens. Look out for them in your backyard and outside and... don't forget to use the Merlin bird app. There's also eBird. There's a couple others out there. Whichever is your preference. I like the Merlin. It's not sponsored or anything. I just love it. And I also got all of this information from allaboutbirds.org. Also done by Cornell Lab, who runs eBird and Merlin bird app. Just a great bird ID. So before we kind of get into the episode today with Amy June, I just have a couple housekeeping things I want to go over. This is our last episode with the Kansas Rural Center in our like 4-part collaborative series on soil health. So really stoked, bittersweet, for this to be ending. Thankful and grateful for the opportunity to work with them. It's been really awesome. And just want to extend the invitation if anyone has a project or initiative or business or garden or whatever, we should record if you want to uplift whatever project you're working on. I'd love to contribute to that. So let me know if you're interested. There is also a big whirlwind happening out in the east right now. And I just wanted to kind of provide some resources for folks and just kind of continue to spread the word about what's going on in Gaza and Palestine. And I have been using this app called Five Calls. Five Calls is a really great resource to contact local officials, to call for a ceasefire, and to continue to spread the word about issues that were happening right now, whether that's, you know, abortion care, trans rights, calling for a ceasefire, you know, the works. That's been a really great resource, and they kind of lay everything out, make it really easy to find the local officials by your zip code, scripts, you name it. So want to plug that. I've also been following this Instagram account, at Al Hadif, KC, that's spelled Al-HADAFKC for local folks listening. This is a Palestinian-led organization dedicated to centering Palestinian voices and liberation. They've been having some weekly Zoom calls that kind of give history on the occupation and a general recap of what's been going on in the past weeks or so. So that has been awesome. They're also doing a lot of organizing and on the ground work as well, if you're looking for more one-on-one group-led projects, which is amazing. So stay connected with them. They also have a list of Palestinian-owned, KC Palestinian-owned businesses. I went to Baba's Pantry in KC the other day. So good. Highly recommend. That's kind of the end of my housekeeping, and just want to remind folks of the season transition that we're in and the state of the world that we're in, and just to drink water and, you know, move your body in the ways that you can, and the earth and nature is coming to a rest, and I think it's also a good time for us to rest too. So just be, look into that awareness and do what feels good with you right now. All right, y'all, enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Amy of Prairie Ramblings podcast. Super excited to be here today. Have Charlotte with us from the Kansas Rural Center. Also have Amy June here. Thanks for being here. This is our collaboration, our last episode actually in our collaborative series with the Kansas Rural Center, that's focusing on soil health. So excited to be here for the grand finale. And yeah, thanks Amy June for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah. First question to kind of get us started, break the ice a little bit, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your relationship with growing food and plants alike? I know you also do some seed keeping work, which I'm very interested in learning more about today.
Yeah, for sure. So I run sort of a fledgling farm at the Common Ground Incubator Farm called Goodway Farm, which is of the same name but totally separate from the Goodway Farm or Goodway Gardens in Emporia, Kansas.
Okay, didn't know about those folks either.
Yes,
Yeah,
so
cool.
that's a really exciting project down in Emporia, and I look forward to linking with those folks in the future. It is hilarious that I named my farm what I did in Pennsylvania and then moved here and am now neighbors with another Goodway.
Yay.
So that's me and my sort of side business farm, which is not a business at all. The goal of it really is to just give food away and grow seed to also give away. That feels like the best thing that I can do with my time, and I just kind of self-fund it, and I really enjoy the seed work itself. I'm not a very good like lettuce grower per se, especially in a Kansas summer, but
Yeah.
seed keeping is really, really fun and keeps me very connected to the farming world. And I started growing in 2019. And I've worked on four different farms in different positions as like a livestock apprentice or co-manager or different roles like that. Largely doing sort of hand scale ag, so not too much tractor work. And it's totally changed the way that I eat and think about my body and food systems and all of these other fun and exciting things that come when you start farming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. The Kansas summers are intense and farming is intense.
It's true and very different. I spent the last 10 years in Philadelphia, and before that, I was born and raised in the Washington, D.C. area. So it's very different here. Prairie life is hot and sunny and also cold and windy. And I'm getting my sea legs this year and learning lots of things the hard way.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's the wind is every year I'm always like, wow, I feel it in my bones. Like, is it just go am I a ghost? Is it going completely through me? Because I feel transparent right now.
Yeah, it's been amazing to witness the hail and the wind and just big weather in a
Yeah.
totally different way.
Yeah, what is it? What was it like more on the East Coast?
Rainy, long rainy season, really long springs typically. I spent a season in the Hudson Valley and it was really fun and I learned a lot, but it was also kind of terrible when you get like a mud season
Oof.
and can't do any bed prep. You can't, you're really limited by the literal 12 inches of soft, squishy ground for all of March, April, and most of May.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's very different, very
Mud
different.
season.
Mud season.
Wow. Cool.
It's horrifying.
Yeah. Sounds hard. Yeah. I mean, we get like a little bit of rain here and I'm putting on my muck boots and trenching in it, and it's like, we got like 3 inches.
Right.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. Okay, so just more rain. Yeah.
You mentioned that you've changed, kind of the way you think about your body, feeding yourself, growing food. What made you start that journey, and change the way you were farming in the first place?
Great question. So I started farming in 2019, kind of following an increasing fear about total food system collapse, to be quite frank, and feeling a need for more self-reliance, especially after the 2016 elections. Things were pretty charged, are maybe pretty charged. And at the time, I was living in a food desert neighborhood in West Philadelphia and was really taken aback by how difficult it was for communities of color and especially working poor people to access green space, high quality fresh produce. These sorts of things, and I wanted to learn more about food systems and food cultures more broadly through the practice of growing. So in taking on that learning, I felt it was like pretty important to push back against common reliance on petroculture and environmental harm that persists in our food system. So when we think about things like fossil fuel intensive fertilizers and herbicides and that sort of thing, So I wanted to learn how to grow with what I had or could make rather than buying in amendments and other manufactured goods.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Did you get any pushback from that?
Honestly, no. Being in West Philadelphia, you're kind of in this funky microcosm that's like pretty progressive, and people are really on board with feeling like they need to grow their own food, feeling like they need greater access to fresh produce, and being really pumped about container gardens and backyard farms and these sorts of things. So
Nice.
there's a really healthy community there of people who are kind of early in their farming careers or really leaning into urban ag in a big way. I definitely want to shout out Sankofa Community Farm in Southwest Philadelphia. They're doing amazing work out of Bartram's Garden, and we're really inspiring. My partner and I were really, really lucky to land at a community garden kind of on the edge of town that we had, I think, like, I think it broke down to like a 30th of an acre, but it wasn't raised beds, and was a community of other growers, I think about 50 of us that had plots up to like 9 plots that I think were 16 by 20. So we had 4 plots back then, back in the day, and that was kind of where I started my seed work with my partner KT.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. That's fun. Were you able to like share resources with the other farmers there in that way? Or was it kind of like you just have land and that's it, you know? Because I feel like there's a lot of varying levels of community garden space where it's like sometimes they don't have water or like a shed or something like that. What was the infrastructure like too?
It was a funny mix. So being on the edge of an urban area, people kind of fashioned their own fences and gates and things, and most people's gardens or farms were locked, including ours. Otherwise, tools often go missing and this sort of thing. There wasn't really a communal shed, sort of like we have at Common Ground. Wasn't bound to function very well with the amount of people that were in and out of that space. So, unfortunately, we were really kind of individualistic in that space. There's things to improve, but it's sort of like, how do we get to the point? I've been reading Adrienne Marie Brown's Emergent Strategy, and this thing that keeps coming up for me is trust the people and they become trustworthy. And I don't know how to do that yet. And in this sort of like setup where I work really hard to be able to buy my shovel and my tiller. And if it goes missing, I'm kind of, up the creek without a paddle. It's a really weird tension,
For sure.
but Common Ground is great.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have had theft there, and it's in a not super urban space. And then I know other community gardens in Lawrence, off of 6th Street, that I get water, watermelons are taken, their shed's always fine, or this or that. So it's to me, like I see in all of that that like, either like people are taking things because they need it or want it, or also money or something, who knows? But also that like they're interested in food. They're wanting food, and my response to when I've been in these spaces with other people is like that. And then also like, if they wanted it, then they should just have it. Especially if it's food, like tool, probably the same, but yeah, it is hard when there you get like a nice row co for $50 or something, and it's like, dang.
There it
That
goes.
love that hoe.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Best of luck out there.
Yeah, it's tough. I
Stuff, yeah.
sometimes wonder, if there had been more sort of community access and resources to gardening, if I would have found farming sooner. And I think the answer is probably yes. But again, it's just like that ever replenishing resources thing of how do we invite more people in, knowing that there's sort of a an opportunity cost that comes with that. How do we resource it? And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, what are we don't know the numbers. Would be curious to find out. Yeah. 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 What were like some of the ways that y'all like worked with the land in the various spaces that you've been in? I guess like the practices that you've used while you've been in the dirt.
Yeah, great question. Mostly I've worked on certified naturally grown or certified organic farms. Last year, I did a half acre garden farm market. Farm market, cool. Whatever we're calling it, for a summer camp that was really fun. That
oh, cool.
Wasn't certified organic by any means, but I followed those sorts of practices. So the only chemicals that I use in cultivation are going to be things like neem oil, diatomaceous earth, kaolin clay, or BT. All of these OMRI certified things that are probably needing more research still. So I can't say that I'm not harming anything when I'm out there except my target individuals. So to pivot away from some of those chemical controls, I do use biodegradable weed control methods when I can find them. So cardboard mulch, wood chip mulch, prescribed fire, hand weeding, that sort of thing. But more often I end up using manufactured items like weed and pest suppression in the form of Remay or floating row cover, woven landscape fabric, silage tarps, and these sorts of things that are fossil fuel derivatives that make my labor input so much lower that it's a hard bargain to drive when, like, it's technically organic, but it's definitely plastic.
But yeah.
But it's just me and sometimes KT on the farm. How do we make it work?
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you. I'm very pro tarping, because I don't. Yeah, it's like not. I'm not using a fossil fueled machine technically, but yet I'm putting this like plastic thing. My like middle ground is like I found a billboard tarp website where you can buy old billboards for cheaper, and they're super thick and they last a long time. And it's like, hey, but I get nervous about what billboards I'm gonna get. I'm like, what if it's a really bad one?
Definitely have the advertisement facing
but,
out when you
go yeah
yeah
yeah but yeah, that's it's hard to find the middle ground in it all. And yeah, and then it's like I think of it on the scale too. It's just like it's, but at the end of the day it's like small, more, you know, sustainable farms per se that are like looking into where things are sourced and what they are is really just like seeds in the network of like seeds of change, you know? And so it's like that's what I try and remind myself or like think about when people share this stuff like this, because it's like, oh, hopefully somebody else can hear this and, you know,
have a great idea.
Have a great idea. And also yeah, understand with us. So
I'm curious, can I ask you a question? Is that permissible?
Would love to. Would love to answer.
Or if Charlotte also, if y'all have any experience with the biodegradable mulch films, because I haven't had good experiences. I've had experiences, but not good ones. So I'm curious if either of you have had good ones.
I have not really heard about this, honestly, and I have not used it. I have used just like straight up plastic row cover, or like not row cover, but that black mesh stuff, which I usually you like burn a hole in. I don't like it. I don't think it works very well personally. I've used it with like cut flowers at certain farms I've worked at, and grass still grows in there, and then it you can like Yeah, and there's like that creeping grass that can grow up and then on top of it, and so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, nothing matters.
Yeah, so then I'm just like, now it's becoming the earth, which is not what we really wanted anyways. So
Well, Amy June, I have a question for your question. What has your experience been with those?
great question to a question. So the first farm that I ever worked at, we had a I guess a plastic mulcher is like the tractor implement where you're basically making raised beds with some sort of like disc plow running and a plastic mulch layer, and then somebody's following to sort of bury the edges of the plastic, and it goes wicked fast unless you're using biodegradable mulch film. So they're the ones that we were using that year were native corn, like most things, and they just it stretches in the wrong ways and kind of tears up. And then the concept behind these products is that they can break down and become soil because they're made of corn. But one, do we want that? Because it's not just corn. And also, it doesn't hold up throughout a season of UV exposure. So if you have a really long-term crop in the ground, you're not going to be looking at something pretty or easy to clean up if you're using that biodegradable mulch, in my experience.
I hope that they keep working on it because I like the idea. My only what do I want to say? Experience has just been with biodegradable trash bags, which has been kind of the same experience. I'm like, well, I'm glad it works, but there's a hole in the bag.
Before I need there to be a hole in the bag.
Yeah. On the way to the trash can. I'm like, well, look at you. You're just peeling back.
You're just so ready to get out
Doing
there into the compost.
what you want, what I want you to do. I want you to rot.
I guess that's a good reframe, Charlotte, of like the compost bags. Like compostable plastics are weird. And there's been, I don't know the companies because it's just like what other people have given, but there's been rolls of like thicker, some like thicker compostable bags. And I actually worked at a restaurant and we had like a full, like giant trash can, like full of food waste from a restaurant. And like I, you know, tied a knot and carried that thing over my arm. It was probably like 20 pounds. And every single time I was like, please don't break, please don't break. It didn't for me. But
Yeah, that's great. To add to my story, though, the particular trash bag I'm thinking about is from yesterday when I took the trash out and it had been sitting outside for 2 weeks.
Oh, so pretty good.
Yeah, so it's doing what it's supposed to, I suppose.
Okay.
Anyways,
Not
to
there.
be fair to the trash bag,
Right.
I have to put that in.
All fairness to trash bags everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, other trash not sorry. I that's interesting. I've seen a lot of videos on the mulching plastic thing, and have been curious on how that worked. I figured it was some sort of like implement. And I was like, how did humans do this? This looks so good.
Yeah, impossible for us
Doesn't,
to do with our measly little hands.
our raccoon fingers.
True.
So kind of to like keep going on with just like the practices, did you change the way that you farmed based on the different places that you were in? You kind of talked about that a little bit with like being at one place that wasn't necessarily certified and other, but have you seen that like change over time
I think the
or develop?
longer, yeah, I think the longer that I farm, the more I divest from certifications. I think the more that I work, especially with as a small farmer, small, whatever, small farmer, and work with other small farmers, I think certification is kind of a like insurance or something.
Yeah.
A little bit not quite worth the upfront cost for a lot of small scale growers. I think it was even a huge hurdle for the 4 acre farm that I worked at my first job. It was 7 total acres, 4 in cultivation. And it was a all of the tracking and reporting is pretty intense. And there's also capital cost associated with that. So I don't think that the certified blank farms that I've worked on have really changed how I think about caring for soil or preventing erosion or any of these sorts of things. I definitely learn new things at everyone else's farms and have takeaways like, wow, berms and swales are a really good idea in an area that gets a lot of rain or that sort of thing. But yeah, it's just a learning journey forever. And I think any, farmer 4 decades into their career would tell you the same. Like, there's always something new to learn.
Yeah, for sure. There's new biodegradable bags.
Hold up for 2 weeks.
Yeah. where do you get inspiration and where do you get ideas on how to do what you're doing out there?
I have very few original ideas, so I would definitely just tip my hat to other farmers just being in conversations like this, but social media, as much of a scary place as it is also a really awesome place to see what other people are working on and how they're managing their farms. There's a few podcasts that I really love that teach me a lot about seed keeping and food cultures that I think help inform the way that I continue to grow my sort of care for working with food and seed work. So I think, yeah, everything just comes back to relationships and being able to, I don't know, lean on other people's knowledge, and let your, I don't know, don't close your mind to new things. There's always a better way or a different way to do something, and you haven't met everyone that you're going to meet and learn from yet. So, kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah, totally. I think it's like an innately should be like a group activity per se, or like a collective thing. And it's like, yes, you can do things on your own, but when you learn from others or talk with others, it's enriching to all who are involved, hopefully,
Yeah. In addition to like building relationships and having mentors, have there been any like programs that you've been able to attend that have maybe I want to say like removed hurdles for you as far as becoming a farmer or growing your operation, I guess I'll call
Yeah, loose.
it.
Loose operation. I probably need a farm number at some point.
Do you? I don't know. We took a class on it.
How did you feel?
Were you at that? I don't know if you were. I guess I took it.
Just last weekend.
Yeah, they talked about the farmer number. I don't think you need one. Yeah, I don't think we need one. I don't think I need one either.
Yeah. Well, it's
Yeah.
weird because I think I go to a lot of regional farm conferences and gatherings of sort of indigenous culture bearers around. I'm enrolled Eastern Shawnee and have a lot of interest in and admiration for traditional farming techniques in North America and neighbors to the south. So I think those conferences are valuable from like a really technical standpoint, like how do I apply for this NRCS grant, or how do I get a farm number, or how do I incorporate my nonprofit? All of those sort of like really strident things that could certainly be barriers if you're not into paperwork or English isn't your first language or all of these other sort of things. But I really think that the thing that keeps me involved in food and seed and farming work is that relationship piece. It can't be necessarily replicated in a conference room, I don't think. But I think Been to a lot of events this year. I really enjoyed my time at Tribal Alliance for Pollinators conference. They do one or two a year. They're down in Bixby, Oklahoma. That is an enterprise or a nonprofit of the Muskogee and Yuchi folks down there. Really fabulous organization that continues to teach me a lot through just even their newsletters about cold stratification and scarification and all these things for our native prairie plants. And I really enjoyed the Indigenous People Summit up in Omaha, Nebraska this year. That was organized by the Mayan community up in Nebraska and focused a lot on Indigenous land practice and seed work. That was really fun. So there's tons going on, really kind of a surprising amount
Yeah.
in a 4-hour radius of Northeast Kansas. So
Wow.
feeling really grateful to be here.
Yeah, especially keeping an understanding of traditional methods is like that community piece and information is like super important to maintain. So it's really great to hear that there's many opportunities for that to continue to happen. Yeah, but always more.
Always more. You'll
Yeah.
notice I didn't plug anything happening in Kansas, so maybe this is a call to other Indigenous producers throughout Kansas, because I know you're out there.
Yes. Where are you? Contact us.
Northeast
Yeah.
Kansas.
Northeast Kansas, yeah. I think it's headed that way. It'll happen. Did you go to the Iowa farm tour?
The Prairie Band this last weekend.
No, Iowa Tribe had a farm tour in September.
Oh no, I missed that. Dang it. Yeah, they're up in White Cloud. I know that I've had the good fortune of enjoying Iowa Bee Farms products, but I think they have a whole regenerative ag situation going on. So I'll be excited to key into that more.
Yeah, they're really setting the stage that I think a lot of us can follow. I'm excited. I didn't make it. A couple of us from KRC did make it up there, so I'm jealous of all the attendees and hope to go next year if they do it again.
Yeah, they do their Bushoje camp out also in September. So yeah, keep your ear to the ground. The tribes in Kansas are doing it big.
They are. It's awesome.
Yeah. Let's see. So we've kind of gone over some of the practices that you've used and done over the years. Talked about the row cover, Mishigas. What was some barriers for using some of these methods?
Barriers for any sort of regenerative practice, I think, is going to be capital. And the second to capital is going to be labor. I think the best thing that you can do when you're considering getting into farming is to find a farmer that you admire, or get along with and like their farm. And work with them to get started and just kind of figure out what their workflow looks like and how they're staffing their farm, if they're staffing their farm, what the seasons look like, what their crop plans look like. Because that planning piece and that experiential learning piece is going to do the most for you when you're trying to understand these techniques. But it's really expensive to buy in a bunch of row cover and hoops and high tunnels and weed barrier fabric and irrigation tape, and all of these things are just incredibly expensive, especially if you're working at, I'm just doing a half acre and it's burning a hole in my pocket. So I think capital is definitely the biggest barrier. I did receive an American Farmland Trust Brighter Future Fund grant this year.
Cool.
So I'm hoping to use those funds to get a hoop house and a greenhouse together, which I've never had to myself. So yeah, I'll be excited to figure out who wants to help me fill it up and get some plant starts together for folks in the spring, hopefully. And somebody hold me to it, because it's a lot of work to put up a high tunnel and a greenhouse, but
Yeah.
going to be really fun, and I'm excited to share.
Cool. Cool. I've done a couple. I'll personally love to help.
It's being recorded.
Cool. Yeah. This is documented. This is my exception.
If anyone
yeah.
listening has never skinned a high tunnel, it's really just comedic
Don't
gold.
do it on a windy day.
Don't do it on a windy day, for sure. And keep your sense of humor about you.
Yes. Yeah. And just go with
Yes.
the wind.
The Kansas way.
Barriers are a lot. I know working on farms, when I've worked for other people on farms, that was always like a big question of labor, like how to like make money and then pay for labor at a, you know, at a somewhat okay, not usually great rate.
Right.
That's always like the, you know, that numbers game of doing farm work. And that's what's been interesting is like when you do it on your own, it's just your own time.
Right.
It's just your own personal time, unless you're doing stuff for money or whatever, which even that, yeah, it's just like hard to make those numbers make sense. And yeah, I mean, it's great. There's many different grants out there that are really cool. But I do feel like they have a lot of stipulations on who can and cannot apply for them. And they're also seasonal. You can apply to as many as you can and then only get a couple or nothing. And so it's hard to, yeah, when you're in that like in between zone of farming, it's hard to get those things to line up right.
It's incredibly difficult,
Yeah.
and I think that's the cool thing about the American Farmland Trust Brighter Future Fund. I think this was the second year that they did it. I think they will continue to. It's one of the funders is Tractor Supply, actually.
Oh.
So thanks, Tractor Supply. And there's very little requirements for reporting and very little requirements as far as having like a fiscal sponsor or a grant match or something like that. So I definitely echo what you're saying. I think it's incredibly difficult for young, beginning, small producers to find opportunities where they aren't doing four times the paperwork to find somebody that will write a letter of support
For
and
sure.
all these other things, and it's due in 2 days. So
And you got to work tomorrow for 6 hours.
it's for somebody else before you come
Right.
back to your farm.
Right, right.
I've definitely just speaking to what the whole make the numbers work thing is the reason that I don't try to sell produce. It's the reason I don't try to sell seeds because I think inherently putting a price on food, we engage in the concept that food is not a human right and that it must only be traded for dollars. And as true and real as that is, I think if I can somehow leverage a little bit of my time or skill to push that a little bit, even if it's just, you know, maybe next year I'll be able to offer like a free CSA to five households or something. I think that can sort of seed that conversation like you were talking about and hopefully open up a bigger conversation about why can't we just grow food for each other and share? Remember when we used to do that? Like
Right.
couple hundred years ago.
Right. Remember when this was like a collective effort that we could do together and all benefit from it? Yeah.
Or when people were allowed to grow their own food.
It's getting dark.
Sorry.
No, it's very real. There's a lot of interesting journalism coming out about seed patents and all this sort of really scary stuff that we're hurtling towards. So I definitely encourage everybody to learn about your plants and save your seeds and get it while you still can and fight for it.
Yeah. Fight for these seeds, fight for this food, and yeah, access to it for sure.
Yeah, don't sleep on it. I doubt people listening to this podcast are those that are sleeping on the food sovereignty conversation, but
I would
just
agree.
in case.
Same. Yeah, just to kind of like plug a local seed thing other than your project is Native Lands LL or not LLC anymore. Oh my gosh. They're a nonprofit.
Restoration Collaborative.
Restoration Collaborative, which sounds better. Not that LLC was bad. Love you, Courtney. if you're here. but they just got they just launched this really fun project called the Seed Team, which anyone can be a member of the Seed Team.
I'm a member.
I'm a member. We can all be members. And that's been really fun to go out and join and collect native seeds for their further restoration projects. I know that Bridging the Gap also is a part of that project. There might be other people that I'm missing, but
Haskell
if
Greenhouse.
Haskell Greenhouse, yes. They're doing work on their space as well. There's a lot of different ways to, this is all kind of like restoration projects, not as much food, but it's inherently food through the restoration, you know?
There are
So
pawpaws involved.
that's right.
So
Yeah.
it's food.
So that's, yeah, there's food. And native plants are food too. I feel like Courtney talks about this a lot, is like, there's seeds, you know, that can be food even, you know, and there's a lot of plants that isn't just like a giant head of broccoli coming out of the ground or something, you know, that is food. It's just like you have to look at it maybe a little bit differently or with a different lens.
I echo that and second that. Everyone should get involved if they have time and are able. It's very fun to collect and save seeds.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. The seed fair is coming up in February also. I feel like that
Yeah.
is just around the corner. But that will be a fun time and there's so many free seeds there. Always like a big, like the whole town really, really shows up for the seed fair every year. So exciting. Yeah.
I moved here in late January, and that was the first sort of community event that I went to. And I was
Oh.
like, I couldn't be happier with the choice that I've made to move to Lawrence, Kansas. So,
Oh, yay. Good. That's so sweet. Oh, it really is a good event. It's like definitely like my number one almost of the year sometimes. Just
almost
saying.
sometimes.
Almost sometimes. Just because I can't decide, you know.
There's a lot of good stuff.
I'm trying to think of other things that, you know, beat it. I'm sure there are, but
Tie. It's a multi-way tie.
multi-way tie. It's seasonal. It's like it's great because everyone's kind of like coming out of their winter shell and is like, hey, what have you been up to? Oh, nothing, you know.
Saving seeds.
Saving seeds, you know. Yeah. So as we kind of talk about the future, how would you like to see agriculture and food systems change in the next decade?
I think I touched on it a little bit, but my like really lofty vision that is going to take more than a decade to achieve is shifting our position in this country to food as a human right, I think is really fundamental to, I don't know, the survival of rural community, the survival of urban community. We have really, really exponentially growing challenges that are coming fast. And that includes access to food. And I don't think that it's particularly sustainable to move towards landscape restoration, soil preservation, clean water and air, and push for all of these sort of regenerative agriculture things and topics and just pass the buck to the consumer. And, you know, if everybody shifts that way, then are we all paying $6 a bunch for carrots at the farmer's market? Because most of us can't afford that.
Right.
So I think that fundamental shift towards food as a human right is going to be crucial for that. And generally shifting towards an economy of care. And, you know, maybe that means leaning into barter or, you know, my neighbor grows the fruit trees, I grow the row crops, or, you know, some kind of collectivization of how we are necessarily interdependent animals, and returning to that in some way is my dream for our food system.
Heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Feel you. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I don't know. Maybe
yeah.
just little by little we can sort of achieve this by practicing these values at the small scale. So like your farm, maybe like my farm, you know, hosting community meals that are free because food is necessary and good and delicious and drives our cultures
and we need
joy.
It.
Yes.
Yeah.
All these things. So
yeah,
hopefully we can all, I don't know, create critical mass in these small movements.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's hard to look at things in the next decade when we're in such a hard time in the decade.
Is something going on?
Is something going on? I don't know. So many things are going on.
Yeah.
So many things are going on, and it's hard when, we live here. And it's not just, it's not just the food systems that I'd like to see change, you know. But yeah, being going back to like being the seed, to continue that is where I always end up and always feel a little bit of grace. Yeah. And yeah, thank you for sharing.
My pleasure.
Yeah. 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 So
what information would you tell a farmer or producer just beginning to transition towards regenerative practices?
What does I have to say matter? I think that if they're transitioning from conventional farming towards regenerative practices, kind of what I was speaking to before about get with a farmer that you respect, and offer them some help and see what comes of that, see what you can learn and get an idea of those sort of workflows and systems. There's so much. Farmers are geniuses. They are charged with being not only growers, but entrepreneurs, shop managers, accountants, marketing experts, and so much more. And I think the stories of all of those facets of being a farmer get lost really quickly. But I think just sort of embedding yourself in a community of growers that are somewhat like-minded or are tinkering with some of the same ideas and transitions that you are is invaluable. But also I think becoming more grounded in the farm work itself might be helped by getting into some ethnobotany. Not that we need to add something else to the list, but I think being grounded with the plant and really understanding that, and maybe this comes from a seed work framework as well, really grounding yourself in the plants that you're working with and understanding them seed to seed and, you know, the journey that they've been on to come into, you know, a market garden kind of setting in the US is often really, really interesting and can help inform what that crop needs. There's a lot to be said for regionally adapted seed, but understanding the, I don't know, the journey from teosinte to modern sweet corn and all of the crazy, wonderful things that happened in the middle there might help you understand more what corn the plant needs and how to potentially provide those things without something like a synthetic fertilizer. Maybe. What do I know? It's been very generative for me to start working with seeds and start learning seed histories.
Yeah. Plants have a story to tell, you know, and just like the, yeah, and just the corn, like you were saying, and like there's so many other plants that have been changed over time, and it's important to see where they're at.
Check in.
Check in.
How you doing?
What's going on?
Is this what you want to be?
Right.
Do you need to revert?
How are you feeling?
Yeah.
How are you feeling right now?
You can ask, and sometimes they'll tell you.
Right. For sure. Or show you.
More often show.
Yeah.
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 More visual or olfactory cues than auditory ones, but.
Right. Depends on the day.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Picturing like a interpretive dance situation with the flans, like
it could be. There are no restrictions here, you know. Farming is often frustratingly solitary, as Amy was speaking to, but also there can be some joy in finding yourself alone in the field.
Yeah,
the freedom that comes with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do find myself with a lot of like. Childlike wonder sometimes when I'm just like out doing my thing, you know, and it's just like it's fun to see how my brain can get distracted by like a worm or a ladybug or something just like so tiny and small. And I've really enjoyed then involving, you know, having friends who have kids, and then the kids come out and they're interested and want to get involved and kind of like continuing that, and they'll be like, oh my gosh, a frog, and all of us are like, oh, a frog, you know, like
it's a huge
ah.
deal.
It's such a big deal. And it's fun to just sit in the steadiness of it and to understand the underworld really that we're just like walking on every day, that's just right below us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was there all along.
It was here.
I had a lot of really wondrous experiences working at the summer camp last year. I have no children. I don't know if I want kids. Scary thought, but I'm glad that they're here. We need them. And
for sure.
Working at the summer camp, there was age ranges between, I think, 7 and 16. And much to my surprise, the teenagers were really into the farm and couldn't believe, a lot of them are from New York or other cities in New Jersey, and they could not believe lettuce grows the way it does and that it can be so delicious, like a little gem romaine fresh out of the field, so crisp. It's like, I mean, you know, and then you get reinvested and re-excited about it with them.
Yes.
Through their discovery of these things. So
yes.
I
yeah
agree.
And their willingness to just like pull up a carrot and just freaking eat that
dirt
whole dirt carrot, no biggie, you know, love that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that it, you know, it speaks to the, you know, people have been doing research on soils and there's microbes in the soils and it's good for us, you know,
makes
and
you happy and stuff.
Yeah, right. Who needs that, you know? All of us.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, yeah, it's fun to kind of like retrain your brain to be like, no, this is good, you know, at least some of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's exciting. It's yummy.
Yes.
There really isn't anything like a good carrot.
It's, yeah. It's next level.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the name of this camp? I'd like to give it a plug.
Oh, sure.
Ooh, yeah.
So it's Apple APPEL Farm Arts and Music Camp. It is a brilliant place for happy, freaky kids who love things like performing arts and visual arts. And it is a really wonderful safe space for queer youth, especially. It's in South Jersey. I experienced my first New Jersey wildfire twice on my field. It is that hot now, and New Jersey has wildfires, y'all.
Wow.
It's really close to the beach. It's a fabulous place. And one of my very best friends is the camp director there. So she invited me to farm there last year, and it was a really, really wonderful experience.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Thank you.
Fun.
It is fun.
Sounds like
summer
so
camp.
much fun. Summer
yeah.
camp. And to have a farm there, it just makes sense.
I'm an only child and I never went to summer camp. So it was, I mean, when I tell you I was sharing joy with these kids,
Yes.
I really
Yes.
was.
Yeah. Summer camp is the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a theater summer camp? Dang. Sounds like so much fun.
It is, it is.
Yeah. 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 Do you have any other lessons or any other thing that you want to share with the crowd?
I don't know how much more wisdom I could possibly share, but
That's okay.
I did make a note to plug another podcast, if I may.
Of course.
Yeah.
My brilliant friends who own and operate True Love Seeds out of Philadelphia. It's a really great seed company and they do amazing profit sharing. They donate to incredible causes and work primarily with sort of communities of origin for all of these seeds that their partner growers are growing and sharing through the seed catalog. But they also produce a podcast called Season Seeds and Their People, which is a really wonderful exploration of the overlap of seed, food, and culture. So you get to kind of hear, that seed to seed journey, but also often from people who have maybe moved to the US from a totally different context and brought their cultural foods with them and hear firsthand accounts of the experience of growing it for the first time in a new place or all of these incredible dishes that are made with these foods that are really precious and prized in cultures that are not always ours. So a really wonderful place to share stories and take in new information and get excited about new crops that you can try.
Yay,
It's
yay.
the best.
Love to share.
Yeah. I've got them added, and I was looking for a additional podcast to put in our newsletter that will come out in December. So I'll tap into that too. Thank you for sharing that.
Course, they are. I can't overstate possibly how wonderful they are, and I've been a seed grower for them. I guess just last year, and took this year off to kind of get, my sea legs here in Kansas, but I'll be growing for them, I think, again next year. And just a great, great group of people that are really, it's hard work for them, and you can feel that and kind of share in that. So.
Yeah. And to be able to maybe get some seeds from them and continue that on is really special too. Yeah.
Yes. Interestingly enough, one of the seeds that I grew for them last year was a Palestinian kousa squash, which is kind of a, I mean, squash, but it's this delicious little petite green zucchini that is super, super tender and is so good made with all of these different sort of Arabic spices and it's just great. And they are donating a lot of their seed profits from their Palestinian crops right now. So, yeah, it's worth a look. And it's really fun to grow that squash. It's extremely prolific.
Awesome. A good squash is a good squash, and a happy squash is a yummy squash.
Yes. Did you write that yourself?
Just came up with it right now. Yeah.
There's a children's book somewhere in here.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's great that they're donating proceeds, and yeah, it sounds like a great time to think about next year and buy some seeds, help some people.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So I have actually forgotten to do this on the last couple episodes, which I can't believe, because this was the one question. I kind of got out of the podcast game for a little bit and I'm just jumping back in.
Just jumping.
And so my question to you is, do you have a favorite prairie moment, and or it could just be a specific ecosystem that you enjoy since you've been here, just to like kind of like give some prairie love? Do you have a specific moment or a time or a place that you've really enjoyed here? It also doesn't have to be here if you don't have one. Any other ecosystem would do.
I think in Kansas, One of my most favorite prairies that I've gotten to experience is the Wahab Prairie at the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas. So it's just a 10-acre remnant prairie that the Land Institute has been stewarding for a couple decades. It's never been tilled. So you see a lot of really spectacular rare specimens out there in Saline County. But to plug something outside of Kansas, I think my most precious memory of prairie is probably my first time visiting the Joseph Williams Tallgrass Prairie Preserve in Pawhuska, Oklahoma. It's about, I think, 44,000 acres of contiguous prairie. It's really something. And they maintain about 2,500 bison that free roam on about 20,000 acres. These are rough numbers, don't quote me.
I mean, big numbers,
Big
very
numbers.
cool.
Once you get above 20,000, who's
Yeah,
counting?
it's
But I was down in the region visiting my Eastern Shawnee tribal grounds after my grandma passed a couple summers ago, and I just kind of like sat on the roof of my car and stared at the prairie all day and watched these large bison moving freely and grazing these native grasses, and it was summer, and just the sounds and the really unique colors of the sky in a prairie landscape as the sun sets or rises. It just struck me like nothing else ever really has, and it felt like a almost like a calling home, if that makes sense, even though it's relocation. When we think about Shawnee being moved to Oklahoma, it just felt really powerful to be there in that moment with those sort of more than human kin hanging out and listening to all the bug sounds and yeah, all the calves running around. It's just really special. So it's a pretty cool place. That I love, and also Wahab Prairie out in Salina. Very cool.
Thanks for sharing. Yeah.
I
Sounds
hope it's a good
beautiful.
one.
Sounds amazing. I want to go. I'm just like picturing all of it
Yeah.
so vividly.
I'm also kind of like mental note.
Yeah, for
Highly
sure.
recommend. It's managed by the Nature Conservancy, the Tallgrass Prairie down there. I think it's like 15 or 20 minutes from downtown Pawhuska, so you can make a trip of it and go see Killers of the Flower Moon, get really bummed out, and then go visit the prairie and get a little pick me up.
Yeah, see some bison.
Yes. So you can do docent tours and all this sort of stuff, and they have really cool programs. You can learn about how they manage the bison herd and rangelands and all that sort of stuff. So
So cool.
good folks, good folks.
Yeah, we love the prairie.
We just love prairies around here.
Yeah, we just love it. It's good.
And if you don't know, check it out.
Yeah,
That's my
absolutely.
big sign off, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like on the edge of my seat if I don't know
Right?
that.
Gotta
Sorry,
go. The thought just left my head completely. I got it back.
Yeah.
That was the long pause.
Yeah. Well, gosh, it's been special. It's been a treat.
What a treat. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Thank
Thank
you.
you for joining us. This is great.
Yeah.
Yes, wonderful, lovely time. Shout out to Prairie Ramblings. There's quite a backlog of episodes that I need to catch up on, so I look forward to spending some time this winter.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah, appreciate it. Are there any other ways we can connect with you and your projects if you want people to?
Yeah, sure. My Instagram presence for the farm is goodway_farm. And you can also find me at the Land Institute. My day job is as their land relations specialist. So I get to spend my days working to figure out sort of all the community connections and the fun stuff that the Land Institute's research programs can and should be getting into in the region. So please reach out if you have any questions about that. We love perennials, so that's the vibe.
We love perennials.
We love perennials.
You really do. Yeah.
Even though I spent a good bit of time talking about lettuce.
Hey, we also love lettuce.
Lettuce is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, we will put that in the show notes and all. And yeah, appreciate your time. And yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Hey, I have something I want to plug real quick.
For sure.
The Common Ground film is coming to Liberty Hall. And so that'll be a great way to kind of spread the regenerative agriculture love,
Awesome.
hopefully get some more people interested to it. I think it'll be a good time to ride the wave of information that they're going to be putting out and getting people excited. So
For sure.
go check that out.
I can also plug that the Kansas Farmers Union Convention is happening in Salina.
Yes.
Also on the 29th and 30th, and there's a pre-conference day hosted by Common Ground producers and growers out of Wichita, Kansas as well, on the 28th in Salina. So check it out.
Yep, I'll make sure that's all on the webpage so people can find it easily, or show notes for the apps.
Awesome, fun and exciting.
Yay. We did an episode with Donna. That was our first one.
Yeah.
And yeah, gave some cool background info of Common Ground and family history and stuff with the space. So that was really fun.
Yeah. She's cool.
So cool. So cute. So sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome. Anything else y'all want to add here?
I don't think so. I've had a great time talking with you both.
Yeah.
Likewise, likewise.
It's been fun. Awesome. Well, y'all, thanks again for joining us today. We have been here with Charlotte from the Kansas Rural Center, along with Amy June. If you enjoyed today's show, we appreciate any ratings or reviews on whatever app that you use. You can find Prairie Ramblings on social media at Prairie Ramblings Podcast, as well as any of your streaming platforms, as well as the Kansas Rural Center on Instagram at Kansas Rural Center. Their website is kansasruralcenter.org. Thanks for tuning into this 4-part series, and we'll see y'all around next time. Bye.